The following interview was conducted November 18, 1973, with Dr. Clyde M. Grant, Gainesville, Texas. Dr. Grant was born April 26, 1907, in Cloud Chief, Oklahoma. He attended Oklahoma University, where he received his Ph.D. and Master's degrees in English. Dr. Grant began teaching in 1930. He has since retired and now lives in Gainesville after 18 years as English professor at Texas A&I University. Dr. Grant, you're not a native Texan, are you?
No, I'm not, Mr. Walker.
Where are you from originally?
From Oklahoma.
Could you relate to us a little bit about your early school life in Oklahoma?
Yes, I went to school in the rural schools when I was in the grades, the first part of my life. And when I was 6 years old, I started to a school called Lake Valley, went there 3 years. And then to a two-room school, and I can remember the two-room schools better than I can the schools down in the early school. The first school was a big consolidating school, and I remember the principal, or the superintendent, I guess you could call the principal, believed in, he did not believe in, well, he believed in the adage to spare the rod and spoil the child. So there was a great deal of whipping went on. It was kind of a source of terror to all of us children in the other grades, because it was a big wooden frame building, and he would take people up to his office, and he'd use a big paddle to paddle it, and you could hear it all over the building. When he would paddle it, it would sound like a big clatter in the hall, you know, you could hear it all over the building. But I don't remember that as much as that would be quite a contrast, I imagine, to the schools in Texas now, when anything like that is strictly supervised. But as I said, the school that I remember best, I suppose, in the grades is the two-room school I went to. We had to walk 1.75 miles to that school. There were two teachers, and I'm sorry to have to report that the teachers weren't very good. And the boys were 6'2" and that sort of thing, and they could just run over the teacher. The teacher couldn't control them at all. I remember one teacher especially. I think that so far away in distance and in time, it wouldn't hurt even to mention his name. His name was Mr. Grimes. I remember it because they had a rhyme that they, I mean, for the school program, one of the boys made up a poem that he recited about Mr. Grimes. He was bald-headed. They called him Baldy Grimes. Baldy Grimes has the time us boys to corral. There's lots of problems he can't work. There's lots of words that he can't spell. It went on like that. And it was so hard for him that the teacher just quit at the middle of the term.
What subjects were taught in your school?
They taught reading, arithmetic, there was geography, and history, penmanship. I think the curriculum was adequate as far as content was concerned. I think it was very difficult in some instances for a teacher to handle the students. I remember, though, after this man quit, that World War I was just over with then. I suppose it hadn't been over very long, and soldiers were coming back, and they got a top sergeant from the army out there, and he really kept us pretty well in line. So it was quite different from what it is now.
You said you walked back and forth to school. What were the road conditions?
Well, of course, the roads weren't paved, and a lot of times they were very muddy. And I don't remember thinking of it as an especial hardship. I do remember sometimes in snow it would be very difficult. I remember that remember especially one blizzard that I'll never forget. We had a little horse named Pet that was on there. Good little cow pony. She could work cattle. She could fill in as a draft horse. She could full of buggy or whatever. And she, I remember it started snowing one time, and we, the wee children, had walked to school, and my father, it started coming up this blizzard, and my father came after us in the buggy with this little horse. And it was just blowing a terribly hard blizzard. You couldn't see 10 feet down the road, but this little horse managed to take the buggy right straight home in spite of the snow, and crossed narrow bridges with the and without any banisters and that sort of thing, and pulled right up in our yard. But, so roads and transportation were left a great deal to be desired in that time, I think.
Did you live on a farm or a ranch in Oklahoma?
Lived on a farm, uh-huh. There weren't any autos, very few people had automobiles in that time, so they traveled by wagon or by buggy. I can remember we lived before we moved to this two-room school place. I mean, I remember that we lived about 16 miles from the main nearest town. Excuse me. And it was very difficult to go to town and come back the same day. It was probably about as far as near to Bristol, something like that, but it would take us longer than one day. We'd have to go stay all night and come back the next day. So the roads and travel was quite different. It might be of some interest. I don't know whether they had this in Texas or not, too, in those days, but where we had school buses now, they had school wagons in those days. That is, somewhat like a covered wagon. It had benches for children to sit on, you know, and they'd go around and pick up children in these school buses or school vans or school wagons, they call them. Of course, you could walk along behind the school wagon and keep up with it, or if there was a creek running through a pasture, well, you could trot down the creek and meet the school wagon back over somewhere on the next road somewhere, you know. So in other words, it was pretty slow.
Did you ever have any encounters with Indian tribes in Oklahoma?
Oh, very little. There were, except just observation. I remember one farm we were living on that the Indians would come by the house on their horses and their wagons, walking, going to their dances. I think they called it the Green Corn Dance. They would go down in the Wichita Mountains. And they would be miles, a procession of miles long. And but personally, I had very little contact with the Indians at that time until I taught school in that area later and taught Indian children. But in the early days, I didn't have any contact with them.
Can you tell us a little bit about the customs that they had in Oklahoma?
Well, the Oklahoma was settled by people from various states, and people from Arkansas, Tennessee, and old Mississippi, Texas, would bring their own customs to Oklahoma, such as all the games they would play, square dances, play parties, I think they would call. I can barely remember them, where they would sing songs and act out different kind of folk dance sort of thing. I can remember that. I don't know for sure what you mean by customs, but they were, it was considered a virtue to be a good neighbor. That is, a person would, a neighbor would do almost anything for his neighbor, you see. I remember, all of us being sick with the flu, and our neighbors from a mile or a mile and a half away would come over and take care of all the chores, milk all the cows, and feed the hogs, and take care of all the livestock, and without any expectation of ever being paid, and then we'd do the same thing for them. I don't know whether that comes under the category of the customs or not. We, of course, course, farming in Texas, ever since I've been in Texas, farming has been quite modern, but mechanized farming and that sort of thing. But before I came to Texas, and I suppose it was the same way in Texas at that time, all the farming was done by, all the power was furnished by animals, by mules, horses. I have worked at hay baling a lot in my life, beginning when I was quite a small boy. And I remember horsepower hay baling, that is, the hay baler that didn't even have an engine, but you had one horse that would go in a circle pulling a lever that would cause the hay baler to run. And also, I've worked with walking cultivators, where now I notice here in the level of black land of South Texas that we have the cultivators that would cultivate several rows at a time with big tractors pulling them, and it's a very rapid sort of thing. But we had, I remember walking, especially behind walking cultivators, where you'd have to drive the team and walk, and also the land was not as level as it is here in the coastal plains, and you have to hold the plow quite able to do that. Also, such things as harrowing and that sort of thing. And where we have the big combines here in Texas, combine the grain sorghum, of course it was mostly wheat and oats up there, but they had binders that were pulled by horses, four horses perhaps, that would pull the binder that would cut the grain and elevate it up into a certain place and tie it in bundles and throw it out on the ground, and it would have to be shocked, of course, and then thrashed. One instrument of agricultural custom, I guess, it's a thing of the past, and I don't know whether they had it here in South Texas or not, but in Texas they did, that is, I'm sure, the thrashing machine instead of the combine, because when I was a small boy, the wheat was all thrashed with a thrashing machine that had to have a big crew of men that would haul the wheat in on, and the bundles of wheat in, and throw it in the tractor separator and thrash it out and then haul it away in wagons, of course, and have big straw piles. They had independent thrashers where the man would own the thrashing machine, and he would furnish everything, that is, there'd be a cook shack, and you'd feed all the men three meals a day, and you'd have to bring your bedroll and sleep on a straw pile, and I've worked at both kinds, and that is something that has entirely disappeared, and it was quite an exciting occupation, quite an exciting time that we would have, and the stories that would be told around the cook shack and at night after the, and while it was raining, and anything that would give us a little bit of leisure, you know, was it's a custom that's gone, and I think a great deal has been lost in the way of old folklore and that sort of thing, and in the loss of the independent thrashing.
You talked a little earlier about the blizzards in Oklahoma. What other weather conditions were hazardous?
Oklahoma had was in the tornado belt, of course, and we had frequently had tornadoes. When people settled in Oklahoma in the beginning, the first thing they built was a storm cellar. That is, they built a sod house, which was protect them from tornadoes, and population increased and cities grew and so forth, that became impractical, and now not very many people have a storm cellar anymore. But I sat on the back porch and watched the tornado dip out of the ground and over across the way and pick up barns and whirl them around in the air and pick up cattle and horses, raise them up and throw them down over somewhere else and see. So tornadoes were very much feared. I remember as a child, we always went to the storm cellar. The storm cellar was not, it was usually located 40 or 50 feet from the house. You had to walk through the rain. But we always, at the slightest cloud, we almost built the storm cellar because people were afraid of them. They'd come from other states, I suppose, where they didn't have tornadoes like that. And it was really very, very fearsome sort of experience to go through a tornado.
What do you remember about your parents and maybe something that they did during their lives, the type of work they did?
Well, my father came from Giles County, Tennessee, eastern Tennessee, and his father was a school teacher, but he didn't get to over the third grade in school. That is about as far as he ever got in school, although he was a well-educated man in certain areas. He studied, actually learned to read, he studied astronomy and history and so forth, and was better educated probably than some people who had high school education these days. And he farmed all his life. My mother came from Mississippi, and was somewhat the same thing. I think she didn't get over the third grade or fourth, something like that, in school. But they were both determined that their children would have better education, much better education than they did.
You've taught at Texas A&I for 18 years. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the changes that you've seen in the educational system here or in Texas in general?
Well, I've seen it grow in size at A&I. It's been the main thing, I think, like the departments, like the business administration and education and English, where I used to. But it used to be just when I came here, very few people in the English department, teachers. But now there are at least 30 people in the English department. And with the increase in enrollment, I think that there is more cooperation probably between the departments now in education. In the university than there was. I mean by that a person specializing in, say, secondary education, well, the history department, the English department, wherever he is going to, whatever area he is going to teach in, well, they help, he gets his coursework from that department. And so there is, it seems to me, a better feeling and a better relationship there. As far as the public schools are concerned, I don't know that I could compare with Texas when I came and the schools of Texas and the schools of Texas at this time, because I taught some extension classes. But I haven't had a great deal of connection or knowledge of the public school, except just through the teachers that I taught.
Do you know of any legends or stories, folklore, that originated in Oklahoma?
I don't know of any folklore, or legends, I suppose, there were outlaws, of course, when early days in Oklahoma, it was sort of a haven for outlaws, that is, before Oklahoma became a state, especially when it was a territory, people would feel like they could run to Oklahoma and be, so it was a refuge there for a lot of people, like the James Boys, and I remember a more local group of outlaws called the Hughes Brothers from over on the Ouachita River, and they were quite famous. And I suppose there are legends that grew up about them. It would take a little digging back in my memory and a little more research to be able to tell anything that I'm even trying to remember the names of some of the sheriffs and so forth who were quite famous in Oklahoma, legendary tales and so forth.
Do you know of any law enforcement agencies in Oklahoma that were comparable to the Texas Rangers?
No, I don't. I don't think that there was anything like that that was in Oklahoma. I think that if there was, I don't think of it now. Anything besides the regular state laws, like the sheriff and county officers and so forth. I mean, county officers would be, or posses or something like that. It would be a just temporary sort of thing. It would be deputized by the county sheriff or something like that. But no state organization that had the it was like the comparing, I think.
Can you tell us a little bit maybe about the methods of communication that we use?
Well, I can remember, even when I was on the farm, that we did have telephone. Although I can remember a little before that, when anyone was sick and had to have a doctor, you had to ride to town in a buggy or on a horse somewhere to tell the doctor. He would come out then and visit the patient. That is, you had to, you know, it's a very slow process. I remember when a baby was going to be born or something like that, they'd have to go get a doctor. You couldn't call a doctor or take the patient in to the doctor. You had to ride in on a horse and tell the doctor about and he'd come out and take care of.
The doctors were pretty much the same as they were in Texas. They were scarce, is that right?
Yes, doctors were scarce. And I suppose some of them, if I've heard, were not very good. But that's, they were better than no doctor at all, I suppose.
Do you remember any of the home remedies that were used around your house when you were younger?
No, I very little, except what we still have a little bit of now, you know, like plaster, mustard plasters, mustard plasters, and I can remember a little bit on sassafras tea that would take at a certain time, and sulfur and molasses, and there was something. I forgot what it was. I forgot the name of it. Adiflogestin or something like that. A little thing they wore around their neck on a stick, and it was supposed to keep the diseases away. And I think it was fairly, of course, it's been discredited now, I'm sure, but people really believed pretty seriously in that. And I can remember wearing that around my neck. You see, I don't even remember what the substance was that they had and called it to use that.